Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The Supreme Court allows the Trump administration to end temporary protected status for people from Haiti and Syria. And as the country celebrates its 250th anniversary this year, Native American communities have complicated feelings. We'll hear from some local leaders. First off tonight, the Supreme Court upholds the Constitution's guarantee of birthright citizenship. In a 6-3 decision, Chief Justice John Roberts joined conservative justices Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett, along with the court's three liberal justices, to strike down an executive order President Trump signed on the first day of his second term that attempted to end birthright citizenship. Immigrant leaders gathered in Chicago today to celebrate the court's decision.
Today, the Supreme Court affirmed that birthright citizenship is a fundamental right. We will hear more details shortly, but here is what you need to know now. No family in America needs to wonder if their newborn or expecting baby is or will be a citizen of the country they were born in.
Also today, the justices agreed to hear a case challenging Cook County's ban on assault weapons. The case was brought by a pair of Cook County residents and gun rights activists seeking to overturn the county's law barring residents from owning, buying, or transferring 125 types of rifles, such as the AR-15. Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke defended the ban as a lawful ordinance and says her office will fight to keep it in place. Workers making minimum wage in Chicago and Cook County are set for a pay raise tomorrow. Non-tipped workers in the city will see at least $17.05 an hour, while tipped workers will earn at least $12.96 an hour. And in suburban Cook County, those minimums will be set at $15.40 and $9.25 an hour. Workers' rights advocates are urging workers to check your check to make sure employers keep up with the change.
Learn your rights and do not keep quiet. If your employer is not paying correctly your wages, it's pretty sure that he's not paying anybody.
Up next, how a Supreme Court ruling could mean thousands of refugees will need to return home. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for the Trump administration to end temporary protected status for hundreds of thousands of people from Haiti and Syria. The decision could leave longtime Chicago residents at risk of deportation to countries still grappling with violence, instability, and humanitarian crises. Here's what DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen had to say about the decision.
We had simply booked them on a flight. We expect to have some pretty full flights going back to Haiti and going back to some of these countries where TPS has been eliminated. Maybe they can go back there and help restore their country. Syria is a prime example. Syria has come a long ways in just a few years underneath their new leadership that we have. We truly expect that Syria can be a great country again, but it takes some it takes the people of Syria to build their country back. The same thing in Haiti. It takes the people of Haiti to win their country back.
So joining us now are Ali Tarok, Director of Development and Communications at the Syrian Community Network and Adjunct Professor of Social Welfare and Policy at Loyola University Chicago. And on Zoom, we have Daryl August, Secretary of the Haitian American Lawyers Association of Illinois. Thanks to you both for joining us. Daryl, starting with you,
for viewers
who may not be familiar, what is temporary protected status and who usually qualifies for it?
So good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for letting me be on this panel. I appreciate it, representing my community. In regards to temporary protective status, it is a immigration status that was offered to Haitians, particularly in 2010 after the earthquake, but actually was started in the 1990s by George H.W. Bush for people that were already in the country, United States, without status. And that was giving them temporary protective status to be in the country, to work, to have work permits. The people that qualified for this varied, but most recently in 2010, after the devastating earthquake that decimated the country, the economy, the health of the Haitian people, under Obama, President Obama, the government allowed them to apply and to come to the country, the United States, under temporary protective status because of the influx of negative aspects of the country of Haiti that became perpetual and renewed off throughout the year. So TPS is a vehicle that allowed Haitians from within the United States and also outside the United States to come here and to live while their country, our country, was in a very, very negative state.
Ali, Syria's civil war may have technically ended, but many advocacy groups, including the ACLU and the International Refugee Assistance Project, say that the humanitarian crisis there is still far from over. What is the situation today?
We are facing a situation in Syria. As you said, the war has ended, but the question is, people are able to rebuild their life over there or not? Before I come here, I was checking the travel.state.gov to see which countries are unsafe for U.S. citizens to go to visit or travel for vacation. The Haiti and Syria are still one of the two top dangerous places for U.S. citizens to travel over there. So I'm not here to talk about American citizens. We are talking about people who are already here, rebuild their life. They are part of our economy. They are hard workers, and they are a member of our society, right? So I don't ask a next door neighbor what your immigration status is. They are part of this neighborhood. They are part of this city. So sending them back to those countries, which is very dangerous for U.S. citizens, absolutely dangerous for those people as well.
Okay. Daryl, similarly, the Trump administration argues that conditions in Haiti have improved enough to end those humanitarian protections. In your view, is that true? Is it stable enough for Haitians to return home to Haiti?
Clearly, no. Haiti has suffered so many setbacks, most recently with the devastation of the political climate, the assassination of the President Jovenel, the influx of gangs throughout the country, in conjunction with the economic depreciation, the natural disasters that happened in Haiti. Haiti is in total disarray in regards to anyone, not even people of TPS, but anyone coming to return to the country. In fact, the administrator said that a ban on travel to Haiti because of all these things that I've stated right now. So there's absolutely no condition right now for Haitians to go back there, particularly Haitians who have not lived there in decades, to go back into enter into the country safely.
Daryl, is there a path forward for people who might be impacted to stay in the country, or will they have to return to their nation of origin?
You know, we want to be straightforward and clear with the Haitian people on TPS. TPS is from that court case has, for lack of a better word, officially ended. But nevertheless, you should go and consult with an immigration attorney, because there are avenues where you can receive status, whether it be asylum, whether it be employment visas, et cetera, or even permanent residencies. We're in a state of change when it comes to the end of TPS or the framework of its ending, but that doesn't mean that there's not any avenues. So you have to look at all your options to make sure that you may have an avenue to be here in this country and do what you do best and make the country great. For those that may not have the avenue, yes, it is a high likely that you may be sent back or you voluntarily sent back. However, the Haitian American Lawyers Association, the Coalition of Haitian Organizations, and many other nations across organizations across the nation are fighting to keep you here.
Ali, more than 300,000 Haitians and over 6,000 Syrians are living in the U.S. And at risk of deportation. And as you mentioned, you know, many of those people have been here a long time, right? And they've built a life here. They've got children here. What would losing hundreds of thousands of residents mean to the communities that they are settled in?
you know, as I said, they are part of our communities now, right? They're contributing to the economy. For example, Haitian community, I was reading that they contributed more than $6 billion to the U.S. economy, and they pay directly over $1.6 billion to the federal government. So now it's not that simple. Just tell them, hey, you have to leave the country. Imagine that the disaster in the situation with the family, the level of anxiety, the level of stress, and, you know, especially within the family with the children. So, you know, we cannot really explain it how much this community is in danger now, but we have to remember they are part of our community, they are part of this city, they are part of our neighborhood. Again, this is our job to protect these people.
Daryl, in an ex post, DHS General Counsel James Percival, he wrote, quote, "The point of TPS is to delay a return home because temporary conditions do not allow it. In other words, everyone agrees you are going home. It is a question of when. Some time ago, the left and their proxies on the judiciary figured out they could slowly and quietly turn TPS into an amnesty program. Fundamentally, the left is outraged because the gig is up." Daryl, how do you respond to that argument?
Well, one of the things that this argument does is it's circular. It makes the responsibility of TPS on the Haitian people, and that is not true. TPS was given, and the Haitians benefited from it. However, it's the government that established it. It's the government that saw that it was a need, and it's the government that continued it. And it's the people that benefit from it, but also reestablish itself as people that built the nation, that helped keep the nation going by paying taxes, by being great members of this community. To say that it's temporary, well, the taxes we paid weren't temporary. The work we did in the country wasn't temporary. The people of under TPS assimilated themselves into this country to become part of the community for decades. And so to say that it was temporary, that was the intent of it, that wasn't so because the administration saw that the conditions were not good for anyone to return. And it still isn't good for anyone to return. In fact, we're working on legislation to see if we can get some help to actually make the country better. But however, looking at this position that is stated that it's just temporary, go back, it doesn't benefit anyone in any concept. It creates the notion that Haitians just, it creates a devastating notion that Haitians just drove themselves in here. And that's not true.
Okay, that is where we'll have to leave it. I know it's something that you're passionate about. Of course, we'll continue to keep an eye on this. Ali Tarok and Daryl August, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Up next, local Native Americans reflect on celebrations of America at 250 years. Americans nationwide are celebrating the 250th birthday of the United States. The signing of the Declaration of Independence represents the birth of America, but groups existed on this land long before English settlers claimed it as their own. For centuries, Native Americans have fought for rights, land, and sovereignty after the United States broke treaties and forcibly removed millions of Natives from ancestral territory. Now, as America 250 celebrations reach a crescendo, many Native communities are still healing from a history of broken promises. So joining us now are Megan Baker, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at Northwestern University, Shelley Tuzzarelli, Vice President of the Chicago American Indian Community Collaborative, and Justin Velasquez, Director of the Tunica Biloxi Chicago Branch Office. Thanks to the three of you for joining us. So first, just sort of what are your general feelings about the celebrations of America's 250th anniversary? Megan, I'll start with you first, please.
It brings up a lot of ambivalent kind of feelings. Native people have a tumultuous history with the United States. But at the same time, this is our land, and we're going to protect it. And so some people are very enthusiastic about it.
Shelley?
Again, you know, we've been here for time immemorial, so we are celebrating our existence, and we are a vibrant fabric of the Chicago community, and we just want to continue to thrive.
Justin?
I think 250 is very complicated for Native Americans because that's 250 years, basically, of admitting we've been conquered, but at the same time, I am born in America, and I only know America, and I love this country, so it is a very complicated feeling.
Do you think there's a way that Native nations could be included and celebrated in some of those celebrations?
Oh, absolutely. If you invite these tribal nations mm-hmm. and actually give them respect in the invitation, I feel like a lot of them would show up and would actually be very educational for the rest of the people watching.
Megan, let's talk a little bit about terminology up front. Is there a preferred term for non-natives to use? Because I know that there have been lots of people of color in this country have been given lots of different names over this nation's foundation. But what is the preferred term for you all?
If you're talking about a specific tribe, you should use the name that they go by. So Choctaws would prefer to be called Choctaws. But if you're talking a bit more broadly, I think Native American, American Indian, those are good terms. Mm-hmm.
Everyone?
Absolutely.
Feel the
yeah.
same?
Yes.
Okay.
Full agreement.
So Justin, data from the 2020 census showed that Native American populations in the U.S. are rapidly increasing, but that data is not entirely complete. Why not?
So Native Americans in general are very underrepresented in any statistics. It could be whether or not they're sought out to be included. And also there's just vast underreporting from agencies and things like that.
Shelley, what's the impact of that lack of data?
Oh, you know, if we have one or two people, we need to be counted, because a lot of times when we're trying to go for funding, what is the first thing that they ask for is your numbers, what's your budget, things like that. So we need to be represented so that we can go ahead and apply for those funding sources just like everyone else.
There are also over 500 Native American tribes in the U.S., but not all are federally recognized. Shelley, what does that mean and what implications does it have for those individual tribes?
I know that a lot of them that aren't federally recognized are striving to do that, because again, that comes with the sovereignty and a lot of things that really help our tribal nations grow and helps them give them that economic independence. So it's very important that we continue to strive and work with those communities.
There's also a bit of a lack of understanding also about where Native people are living, right? Like many folks think that everybody's on the reservation,
right?
When that's not the case.
Yeah, only 30% of Native Americans live on reservations, and the other 70% live in urban, suburban, or other rural areas. So yeah, we need to continue to work with those because of relocation. A lot of people relocated. Chicago's a relocation city, so a lot of tribal members moved from all different. We service about 150 to almost 175 different tribal nations, so that relocated to the Chicago area. So we want to make sure that we're servicing those tribal members.
Megan, there's a vast history of treaties and agreements with Native tribes and the U.S. government. Are any of those still being upheld today?
Some of them are, but there are aspects that are not. There are different agreements that have been broken. Things have not been provided as they're not supposed to, as they're supposed to be. Funding isn't as strong as it should be, and a lot of tribes and a lot of Native institutions are suffering because of that.
And just to help viewers with understanding, what are some of those treaties, and what were some of the promises made there?
So for the Choctaws, when we were moved in 1830, we were kind of promised that it would never be incorporated into another kind of state, that they would be governed as sovereign nations and never included in the United States. And that isn't the case anymore, so.
Okay. Justin, tell us about the healthcare inequity and the impacts that has on Native communities, both in urban cities and in rural reservations.
So in my opinion, this is the biggest issue that Native Americans are currently facing. Native Americans, on average, live 11.2 years less than the general population. That is any race, just anyone, 10 and a half years, or 11.2 years of less time with our loved ones in families is completely unacceptable, and it goes back to data and not having those correct numbers. On a lot of intake forms for medical things were listed as an other. So it goes back to the lack of data of how can we get to the bottom of what's causing us to live a decade less than everyone else when we don't have those numbers to get to the bottom of it.
Right. It also sounds like it could be a lack of access to health care, for example, for the 30% who do live on a reservation. Is that fair?
Yes, there absolutely is lack of health care. IHS has a lot of gaps in servicing Native Americans, and they also have other challenges, such as even getting to a medical facility. So,
what could be done to address this? Is it just like solve the data, solve the problem?
I think that's a very complicated question on how do we close a decade life expectancy gap amongst our people?
Advocacy is a big thing. I think we just need to advocate more. And again, our health center here in Chicago doesn't have a dentist. And so that's one thing that we definitely are going to be trying to get in front of to make sure that we get the funding to bring a dentist in for our community.
Okay. Shelley, Chicago is located on the ancestral lands of several indigenous tribes. Tell us more about how the traditions and relationships of these tribes help to shape the Chicago that we know today.
The roads, you know, we would like to be honored for some of those, a lot of the things that we've given to the community here in Chicago. A lot of the roadways are old Indian tribes. A lot of the naming of the streets are Indian names. So again, honoring some of the the tribes that have been here from in memoriam. So again, being able to address all those tribes that have been here and, you know, providing services that we need.
What are some of those street names for folks that might not know, right? Like, it's a name that we've all known, whatever the name is, right? We don't know where it came from. What are some of the names that need to be recognized?
I can't think
of any on the spot.
I'm not sure, but yeah, there's plenty of places where Native Americans should be given recognition, and they are just not given that recognition. We were here before anyone else, and you wouldn't think that.
Justin, a law passed in 2023, and it requires all public elementary and high schools in Illinois to teach about Native American history, sovereignty, and contributions. How would you rate the implementation of that? How do you think that's been doing?
Honestly, it could have been done a lot better. There is still a lot of work that can be done to actually finalize what that curriculum is and what's going to be taught. There also needs to be more funding to help move that along. I mean, it's easy to just, hey, this is what we're going to do, and not actually implement anything behind that.
Yeah, one of the things that we need to do is not only get the curriculum together, but we have to train the teachers in order to train the children.
And that goes back to we need funding to be able to do that.
Shelley, your organization, Visionary Ventures, you're part of a joint effort to create the first affordable housing project with a Native American focus in Chicago. Tell us about that project and about the need for affordable housing for Natives in Chicago.
The housing is called Jigsabeek, and it's a Pokagon prairie band name for at the river's edge, because we are near the Chicago River and water is life for our community. So having this housing, again, we were promised housing over 60 years ago during relocation. So to be able to have this housing that is targeted to our community, we were very deliberate and intentional about the cultural aspects of this housing. 45 units, studios to three bedrooms, so that we can have that intergenerational community within community. So we're just very happy to be able to provide this housing after so long for our community.
And what is the status of that? Where is it going to be?
It's 2909 West Irving Park Road. It's about 65% complete under construction. We actually have the river flowing through the front of the building and the bricks starting to go on, so it's looking wonderful.
All right. When's your expected
end of
cut
October.
The ribbon? Okay. All right. So before we go, Megan, what are some of the ways that you think the relationship between Native and non-Native communities could be better going forward?
I think there should be greater recognition of tribal sovereignty and people trying to support it and help allow tribes to determine their own kind of communities.
Yeah, Shelley.
I think we need to be have a more of a voice, and having that being on more boards and on more being out there in the community so we can provide what our community needs.
Justin.
We need to start being in charge of telling our own story. Mm-hmm. There's so much Native media within these past 10 years that isn't actually made by Native Americans. And if we let someone else tell our story, they're going to tell it wrong.
Okay, I think that's a good place to leave it. And thanks to the three of you for joining us to share your stories, Megan Baker, Stanley Tizzarelli, and Justin Velasquez. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.